at she's ill. The Honourable Smuts and the Honourable Swart is on a study tour overseas, together with the Honourable Abrasini. We have had an apology from the Honourable Shiloa and the Honourable Mentor is ill too. So there is quite a large contingency of the committee members that are not available today. The Honourable Kutsi called me this morning. The plane that was going to bring him here this morning, the engines were overheating and they reduced the passenger list because they felt that the engine might overheat with too much passengers, so he decided wisely to stay at home. I'd like also to mention that I got a phone call from the Chief State Law Legal Advisor, Mr. Enver Daniels, who apologized. He would like to be in here today, but apologized that he couldn't be here. His staff, nevertheless, is here, as they will always be present when we deal with the bill. I'd like to invite the Minister, the Honourable Twele, who is here, to continue with his further responses to the public hearings, which we had some time ago. And I thought I'd just mention this, because it seems there's a lot of confused people out here. The minister does not have the power to amend the bill. What the minister is doing here, because he had introduced the bill to Parliament, and since there has been a number of concerns raised at the public hearings to the bill, as is the protocol at Parliament, the minister has been given an opportunity to comment on those criticisms and those concerns that have been raised at the public hearings. These comments of the minister that we have heard at the last session and that we will hear today are matters which the committee may or may not take into consideration. It is a concession that he, as a member of the executive, might be making. They are only suggestions, and the committee does not have to take it into consideration. So, for those of you that don't know the process, the minister is not amending the bill. The minister does not have the power to amend the bill. Something else I thought I might make clear. The committee has not yet started interacting with the bill on a clause-by-clause basis. We have been collecting information, we have been listening to the public, and contrary to what the public or some people might think, we have been listening, and all the information and the concerns that have been raised will be taken into consideration. It will be debated when we deal with the clause-by-clause process. We have not yet reached there. But as soon as that process starts, that process involves starting on page one and going through the bill clause by clause and then looking at the concerns that have been raised. And the committee will then decide whether these clauses or whether a particular definition should be changed or whether it should be deleted. And it is the committee, it is in fact Parliament that has the power now, and only Parliament that has the power to amend the bill. So, those of you that were perhaps not familiar with the process, that is the process that will be followed in due course. It is a slow process. It's not a fast process, because you will understand we are dealing with formulating law. And the law needs to be as accurate and as clear as possible. And very often it is full stops, commas, the choice of words that become very serious debate in the committee. But that's a process we have reached, and those of you that are interested in the process, you are welcome to come and watch the process unfold, and you would be able to see how Parliament works and how bills that are introduced by the minister very often land up totally different from the way they looked when they were originally introduced. If you have listened to the minister in his previous presentation, you would have got the impression that the minister has himself recommended a number of amendments. Whether the committee is going to take those amendments into consideration, as I've said, is another matter. But let it not be said that Parliament has already processed this bill and that this bill is going to survive or not survive in the shape that it presently is. That we will only know when the process is finished. And I would also want to add, there can be no Parliament in this world, certainly in South Africa, that is going to be that brave to pass a bill that it knows itself is clearly unconstitutional. I don't know if there are such fools that are alive today. I have not met any of them in Parliament. So, if there are any concerns out there that this committee is going to deal with the bill in such a manner that when it is finished, it is clearly unconstitutional or that it is violating constitutional rights, I think that would be a very incorrect impression of the way Parliament works. Having said that, I'd like to invite you, Minister. Sorry you had to listen to all these garden and housekeeping matters. The process today, the Minister is going to continue with his presentation. And I think after that we would want to question him, the members would want to question him on what he said. And I think after that we will adjourn. That is the purpose of the meeting today. Can we have that understanding, honourable members, that we will proceed on that basis, that when the minister is finished, that we would... I don't think the minister's got objections to questions being put to him on his presentation, honourable minister.
Thank you, sir. Now, I've been questioned quite a lot, but I still put no objection to questions. We'll be happy to answer any questions from the honourable members. Honourable Chairperson and of the other committee, honourable members, and ladies and gentlemen, we meet just a week after we've had interaction as government, ANC government, with the South African Editors Forum. And Chairperson Levy just put that we express the same view. You have just expressed that the process is in Parliament, and we respect the Parliament as an institution created by the Constitution. And whatever we do is just the proposals to the committee, which are in charge of the bill at this stage. We remain committed to interact with any stakeholders with the view that whatever we interact will bring back to the committee, because it's the committee and Parliament which must decide. And I've got no intention to repeat what we said last time, and we remain convinced that the presentation we made last time was a comprehensive response from our side. However, today we present this second submission of our proposal in response to the public hearing and the debate on the Protection of Information Bill, Bill number 6 of 2010. In this installment, we would like to focus our input on the guiding principles that inform the approach we have adopted in relation to the Protection of Information Bill and the international best practices that underwrite it. Secondly, we would like to reiterate what information is targeted for protection by the bill, which would be followed by some case studies of comparable lessons from some of the selected democratic dispensations, and round it up with some concluding remarks. Maybe if I start with just the guiding principles. The approach you have adopted, Chairperson, towards this bill is underwritten by the International Covenant on Human Rights and European Covenant on the Human Rights. It is also in line with the African Charter on Human Rights and Human and People's Rights of our intergovernmental organization, the African Union. These have produced a substantive international jurisprudence on the national security matters and access to information. The right to freedom of expression is enshrined in a range of international and regional treaties and instruments which bind various member states, including South Africa. These include Article 19 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which codifies the Universal Declaration on Human Rights, and Article 10 of the European Convention on Human Rights. Freedom of expression also enjoys cognition in the African Charter on the Human and People's Rights and the American Convention on Human Rights. Each of these instruments also provides for the limitation of this right on the basis of national security. For instance, the International Covenant on Human Rights provides as follows on national security. Article 19.2, I quote, "Everyone shall have the right to freedom of expression. This right shall include freedom to seek, receive, and impart information and ideas of all kinds, regardless of frontiers, either orally or in writing or in print." Article 19.3 continues to say, "Freedom of expression may be subject to certain restrictions, but these shall only be such as are provided by law and are necessary. A, for the respect of the rights and reputation of others. B, for the protection of national security or of public order or of public health or morals." Close quote. Since we have now established the international legal basis for the limitation of the right of freedom of expression, which involves the right to access, disseminate, and receive information, ideas, views, and knowledge, let us turn to the international best practice on how this right may be limited. In this regard, we would like to highlight the three-part test in the norm. We would like to highlight that the three-part test is the norm. This three-part test demands that limitation must be firstly be prescribed by law, and such law must be clear and precise. Two, be genuinely directed towards achieving one of the legitimate aims of the treaties, which provides that the basis for the limitation, namely national security or public order or public health or morals. If the ground is the protection of national security, then the limitation must advance and contribute towards that national security. And lastly, thirdly, be justifiable and necessary in a democratic society. So those are the tests which are normally used internationally to advance this limitation. Chairperson, although we remain convinced that the original version of the bill conformed to these three-part tests, we have since reviewed and recommended that certain provisions be deleted to better conform with this test. In this regard, we are referring to the total removal from the Bill of the National Interest and commercial information to ensure clarity, precision, and sticking to the legitimate aims. In addition, we have put prerequisites for classification to ensure that any of these legitimate grounds for the limitation of the right of access to information are not abused for hidden wrongdoing, corruption, maladministration, inefficiency, and incompetence in the public service. We have already indicated in the previous presentation that the two classification tests is and needs no repetition today. The second aspect, Chairperson, that we considered following the public hearing, although we are neither endorse it nor a party to it, is the Johannesburg Principles on National Security and Access to Information. Here in AFTA referred to as the Johannesburg Principles. Drawing on the international and regional case law, the Johannesburg Principles were defined by a group of experts convened by Article 19 in October 1995. Their aim is to clarify the meaning of and to scope and the scope of justifiable limitations upon the right to the freedom of expression as contained in various international conventions and covenants. The first principle of the Johannesburg Principles reiterates the three-part test as explained in detail. Since we have already dealt with this principle, we'll now focus on the second principle that we'd like to quote in detail. It provides as follows. Principle 2, legitimate national security interest. Okay. A restriction sought to be justified on the grounds of national security is not legitimate unless its genuine purpose and demonstrable effect is to protect country's existence or its territorial integrity against the use of threat of force or its capacity to respond to the use of threat of force, whether from an external source such as military threat or internal source such as incitement or violence to overthrow the government. B, in particular, restrictions sought to be justified on the grounds of national security is not legitimate if its genuine purpose or demonstrable effect is to protect interests unrelated to national security, including, for example, the protection of government from embarrassment or exposure of wrongdoing, or to conceal information about the functioning of the public institution, or to entrench particular ideology, or to suppress industrial unrest. The provision in this bill, Chairperson, conforms to the above-mentioned Principle 2 of the Johannesburg Principles. Having looked at the international best practice, it is clear that the best practices are in line with the provisions of our own Constitution. Section 36, dealing with the limitation of rights, reiterated these best practices, and we have not deviated from our Constitution. International law and and best practices. Some may argue that this is just an empty assertion. Let us turn to the information that we seek to protect and for which we are seeking the limitation of the right of access to information. In the light of above, Chairperson, those who continue to argue against the bill following our proposal on the 17th of September this year and today are basically are of the view that South Africa has no legitimate national security to protect. Clearly, this is far from the truth. Coming back to what information we really seek to protect. During the first submission of this presentation, we argued that we recommend the Canadian approach of listing issues of concern to national security as advisable approach in our consideration. We argue that this approach ensures that the definition's reach is clear, precise, and limited. We indicated that we wanted to protect legitimate national intelligence structures, sources, legitimate operation, method, doctrines, facilities, and personnel of security structures, sensitive confidences in the international relation, ongoing investigation by state security structures, details of criminal investigation and legitimate police and law enforcement methods, economic, scientific, and technological secrets vital to the Republic's stability, security, integrity, and development. The above wording is similar to that used in the Canadian Security of Information Act, found in subsections 24 to 30 of the Anti-Terrorism Act, which extensively revised their really used and then old official secret inherited from the United Kingdom. These changes were aimed at responding to new threats of economic espionage, non-state actors whose impact far outweighs their size and means. Chairperson, we also seek in the national security to negate hostile acts of foreign intervention, terrorist and related activities, information peddling, espionage, unlawful acts against the constitutional order. The above reflects not just South Africa's concern, but that of other developed and developing countries. I have therefore tasked the ministerial staff working with the state security agency to prepare further briefing, a briefing which they will present to the other committee, if they have to come into wish, on how other democratic countries have sought to deal with these issues. For this presentation, suffice to indicate that countries such as Australia, Brazil, Canada, Kenya, New Zealand, and Zambia are also grappling with the above challenges. We are therefore not attempting to exceptionalize these challenges. We are legislating for real problems and are not seeking to cover up corruption, as some purport. It bears reputation that the abuse of classification is an offense, and I would once more request that the other committee should make the current sentences against those in the public service who want to abuse the classification system deterrent and equal to the severity of the damage. Importantly, the existence of public interest override in the Promotion of Access to Information Act, which is acknowledged by this bill, enables those who want to expose documents classified to hide corruption or an impending public health problem to do so using legitimate channels. In addition, the bill is aligned to the Protected Public Disclosures Act, which provide that criminal and other irregular conduct in the organs of state and private bodies are detrimental to good, effective, and accountable and transparent governance in the organs of state, and open and good corporate governance in the private bodies, and can endanger economic stability of the Republic and have the potential to cause social damage, close quote. What remains hidden in the open is that this act provides for disclosures to legal practitioners, to employers, to members of the cabinet or the executive council, to the public protector and to the auditor general, just to cover the broad categories of the act. Although this act deals with the disclosures on the basis of public interest, it is, however, does not list the media. It does not list the media as a legitimate recipient of information arising from protected disclosures initiatives. Having considered seriously the submissions to create a section on defenses in this bill, we remain convinced that conceding to such demand would be tantamount to shredding this bill even before it becomes a law. To allow anyone to put national security information in the public domain with the hope that such action may, in the unlikely event, be deemed to be in the public interest would be simply reckless. It would be just to increase the vulnerability of the Republic, reduce the risk of doing business for our adversaries, and put many lives, limbs, and property in undue danger. In short, I will fail in my duty if I concede. Never should the committee therefore concede to the public interest defense and include such in the bill, I beg. Here are the reasons. We have critically studied the reasons why the United Kingdom, the first country to have public interest defense clause in its Official Secrets Act of 1989, decided against keeping it in their statute book. We are convinced that the reason that led to them to repeal that provision remain valid for us. In the main, public interest defense made the law unworkable and provided a loophole exploited by many for self-serving purposes. Their efforts unduly undermine national security by unintentionally encouraging the leakage of sensitive information. With the provisions of the Protected Public Disclosures Act, Promotion of Access to Information Act, and the public interest access to information aligned in this bill, adding public interest defense would really be an overkill. We have already lowered the classification levels from 4 to 3. We have also provided for request for declassification and review of classified information on basis of public interest. The UK issued its national security strategy in October 2010, which is fresh from the press. In it, it has followed advice to proffer to the British people, which is relevant to our country, Rainbow Nation, as we consider this bill. I beg to indulge, as I would like to quote that at length. I quote, "Our security and intelligence agencies play a vital role in protecting our country from threats to our way of life. It is inherent in their work that most of it has to be done in secret to protect those who risk their lives for our own security, and to maintain the confidences and cooperation of partners overseas. For the same reason, the exercise of oversight, whether by Parliament or through the courts, also have been has to involve a measure of secrecy. Here, too, we must strike a balance between transparency that accountability normally entails and secrecy that security demands. Striking these balances is not always straightforward, and reasonable people can differ on how to do it. This disposition, Shepherdson, must be food for thought for us as a nation. What is our national interest? What our ends? What are our ways and means to achieve them? As South Africans, we'll recall that the country hosted the International Intelligence Review Agency's conference here in Cape Town in 2006 because we are rated very high in the international list of intelligence oversight systems. We continue to be a leader in developing world. In the post-9/11 world, we remain the most progressive nation in the way we conduct intelligence and counterterrorism within a human rights framework. This position will continue to defend and advance despite the far-fetched and unfounded claims that we are returning to apartheid. In conclusion, Chairperson, I would like to once more thank the members of the Ad Hoc Committee on the Protection of Information for their attention and engagement. Those who continue to engage in the public debate and demonstrations for enhancing our work and forcing us to educate our nation on national security matters and intelligence. South Africa is better for the engagement despite its exploitation by those who have not downrated their own countries, followed many reversals in the conduct of counterterrorism outside the framework of human rights. They will be quick to judge us out of context, but we will remain in reality the best country when it comes to the conduct of intelligence, balancing secrecy and openness in the human rights framework set by our national values. We therefore support our efforts to accommodate rational and reasonable submission that we are proposing, and collectively remain the proud South African. Chairperson, that was just our response, and we are happy to take the question. And
Honourable members, we agree there will be questions now. You've heard the Honourable Minister's proposals to the committee. A short and very concise history of what is best practices. I don't think it was the Minister's obligation to come and inform us in great detail. I think if there is more to be looked at in the international arena, that would be the committee's work to look at this best practice in great detail. I think the Minister merely drew our attention to that, that there is a best practice out there. And I think the Minister makes out the case that he believes that what the bill is trying to achieve is in line with these best practices. But be that as it may, if I have summarized the minister incorrectly, I'm sure he will remind me very soon that I've got it wrong. Honourable members, can we have some questions? Honourable Mania, you seem to be stunned. You have a question, Honourable Mania. Let's hear your question.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Minister for his presentation. I'd like to begin with a statement that was made, or statements that were made after the last presentation. Now, the statement made, Minister, was that the bill had no implications for the freedom of the press in South Africa because there was no clause in the bill which made any direct reference to the media. Now, I wonder if the Minister would concede that, in fact, the bill in its current form, especially given Section 1839 and 38, I would wonder if the Minister would concede that the bill actually does have fairly dramatic implications for particularly investigative journalists who, if they came into possession of a classified document, would have an obligation to hand that document over to the police. So that's the first question. Does the Minister concede that the bill in its current form does in fact have major implications for the freedom of the press in South Africa? The second question is, given your statement on page 10, where you say that to allow anyone to put national security information in the public domain would simply be reckless, does the Minister concede that there are in fact circumstances where it may be in the public interest to put national security information in the public domain? And the example I would use is if in fact there was some evidence or a document that revealed corruption, criminality or wrongdoing within the state security services themselves, then would it not be in the public interest for that information to be in the public domain? Thank you.
Honourable Minister, we don't have to concede. Okay. If you don't want to concede, this is not a concession meeting, but if you feel that you're in a position, let's hear you, with the Honourable Minister.
No, Chairperson, we are not in the business of concessions. We are in the business of consulting the public and taking the input from the public seriously and taking them into account in further making our proposals. That's what we do as an ANC government. Maybe starting with the last question. Whether the those who expose corruption won't be affected if we don't put a public defense clause. No. I think it's section... This bill is not in contrary to what is public. Protected Disclosures Act. And as we said even last time, and we've been saying in the public, in our system of government, we've got all these checks and balances and these other acts which are sought to prevent and expose corruption. That act, as we're quoting today from it, it provides for the official, what is interesting about it is both applicable to government and public entities, private sectors. And that the employees can report to those who are responsible. There is a clearly a legitimate procedure on how to disclose that information. They can disclose it to higher bodies like the Executive Council or members of the Cabinet. They can also expose that information, as we have said again, because we've got these systems we've put in our Constitution for checks and balances, to the public protector. They can also expose that information to the Auditor General and any other legitimate person as prescribed in the law. What we're saying, Mr. Maynard, in our reading of that law, in that list, there's no media. There's no way that public protected public disclosures have to take it to the media. It's not saying that. So we do have extensive mechanism to protect corruption, maladministration, and inefficiencies in our government. And we're also saying, in addition, we've put penalties for those who may be classifying for such reasons or wrong reasons. And as the ANC government, we've said in our last proposal, we are amenable to the proposals during the public hearing that maybe the sentences we have proposed are not proportionate when it comes to the officials. And we have said we are recommending to the ad hoc committee to strengthen that section. We don't have any objection at all. So I think then if we take all these things into account, unless, Mr. Maynard, you believe that this elected government is inherently corrupt. Because if that's what is in your mind, whatever we do won't change. So we think that legally we have got all the instruments, and I can argue with you that there's nothing that we should propose that this elected government is inherently corrupt. Actually, it is this government which is exposing a lot of corruption which is happening within government. Much more than anything. It's not the media. Media has also got its role. If it comes through such information, they can expose it. If they come through such, if it is a classified information, follow the legitimate route which is set up. Even protected Public Disclosures Act say you must follow that route. You don't just run with information everywhere with the hope that you can use public defense. Secondly, as we have been saying, we must not try to invent what is not done elsewhere by other democracies. The public interest in terms of accessing information and using legitimate means, we have said we absolutely having no problem with it. That's why we are aligning it with these other acts. That's why there's a provision even in this bill for such realignment. We have got absolutely no problem with it. What we are basically saying, those who confuse public defense and the public interest for accessing, because those are two different things. And we won't agree with that. And in short, Chairperson, we think the checks and balances and what is in other acts and what we've realigned this bill and with other acts as we propose will sufficiently cover those who try to classify incorrectly. And the process of review, even if you miss all these processes, I'm saying our public protector is very active, and I've not seen the public protector complaining being hindered by any act. I've not seen our auditor general saying I'm not doing my work because I'm hindered by this act. So the practice doesn't really show in reality what you want to say, unless you're just saying let there be no protection, and unless you are also believing, which every party has got to believe, that there's no legitimate national interest or there's no legitimate national security issues we're trying to protect. And we think that we have done that in today's presentation. Are we legislating through this act to regulate the media? No. We have got no mandate, our department, to do so. We have got no mandate to regulate the media. We have said the media is a very important aspect of our society in order to inform, educate and entertain. But what is correct, then the media get information through various methods, including their sources, which they never want to disclose to, for the legitimate reason, and we have not challenged them on this. So the media remains a very important aspect of our society as a young democracy. And we will not, and we have got no intention to put any clause to say the investigative journalists mustn't do their work. The bill stipulates exactly what should the investigative journalists do if they come across classified information. There is a legitimate process which is set up in the Act. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Very polite, Honourable Minister. I thought you were going to be more harsher on the... But the Honourable Mania is on the pulse of the issue here, because it is clause 18 that has got a number of people uncomfortable, because this is particularly the clause that deals with the information peddlers, if you will recall. And we did have those very useful presentations from the Minister on the damage that the information peddlers have been causing. And this clause 18 that the Honourable Mania has drawn our attention to is precisely that clause that is directed at information peddlers. But I think, Honourable Mania, if I might just assist the Minister here, by the time you get to criticising this clause, you must have already conceded that information can be classified. You see, because this clause deals with classified records. Now, unless you are going to concede that information can be classified, you can't even get into arguing about this. I mean, you understand what I'm saying. So, and then you can take the argument further whether, you know, they should go the media route or whether these things should be done within government structures.
I still reiterate, there's nothing in that bill which talks about media. This is a proposed legislation of general applications, and it doesn't single out media, it doesn't single out a particular section of our society. So, and it will remain such, and we don't really have any... Maybe Chairperson, now that you have raised this matter, I thought I'll raise it quietly towards the end. You know, at the beginning of our interaction before the World Cup, we were requested by your committee, Chairperson, to make some presentation on information peddling. And we were guided in the procedure, which was adopted by you as honorable members. Subsequently, and you took certain decisions which we are intending to abide by them, you requested us to make, you agreed as members that you will make a presentation, we won't circulate the document, we'll take the document, and we've been observing that, and because we respect you as an institution of parliament. But some of your members have been very vocal in media, saying now we must undermine that decision. I'm not opening it for discussion, but I'm appealing for this committee to consider that matter, because now the onslaught is on us for respecting the decision you collectively take as a committee. So I'm not opening up, but it is stressing us, because there are a lot of distortions which are there in the media. And as you know, we don't... our focus is not to respond to those things in the media. We tend to focus on our core business. I'm just appealing, Chairperson, that at some stage, when you consider these things, please respect your own decisions rather than shifting it to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Honourable Members, that is a matter which, whatever it might be, We will deal with that sometime, not today. We are dealing today with the questions. Can we have more questions? We'll get back to you, Honourable Manuel. Will you just see if there are any more questions? Yes, the Honourable Ncabedele.
Chair, I wouldn't call it a question. It's a contribution, but because I'm not born English speaking, maybe it's far wrong to say contribution. You know, it's nice that we are all here in the country that is new, with old people, of course, but it is new. There are teachers, there are ministers of religion, there are mothers, there are all these professionals. But let us avoid singling out a group of people and begin to think that all that we'll be doing in this country will be according to who is there. Yes, I understand some people believe that newspapers are the owners of information. Therefore, whatever is said by information, with information, it goes to newspapers. I think as a country, we've inherited something very wrong. We've got teachers who are teaching us even things that I haven't heard since 1994. That is information. I'm begging as a country woman that let's not begin to blow out of proportion a particular sector in our society and begin to think with our minds that everything that we say as South Africans is directed to that particular sector, because it don't lead us anywhere. That's one. Second, I'm talking as a woman now. Serving in this ad hoc committee has helped me. Now I understand why when there is a toddler in the house, toddler, if you link it to what I said earlier on, when there is a toddler in the house, it's seldom that the father stand up when the toddler is walking towards a heat or towards a stove, towards a primary stove, depending where you live. It's almost mothers, almost always mothers who feel it from within, and then they jump. But those mothers don't say, my child, don't walk towards that direction, because it did cripple the mentality of the child to be restricted to a particular moving ground. So I'm requesting that, as the minister is saying, and as we are all saying, not unless we are going to fold our arms and not monitor the public protector, the buyer, a number of things. It will be our fault as citizens. It won't be the fault of the minister. It will be our fault because we voted, whatever you voted for, but you voted. It's our right and all of us our right to say, but when we were formulating this thing, we were giving assurance that it won't happen like it. Once you keep quiet, you are guilty. 10 times guiltier than those who are doing it. So we are toddlers in this country. Yes, there are old people, old by age, but they are toddlers right now. Because it's new. So let's allow our kids to move mentally and otherwise, and we'll say, whoa, this thing does not appear in this document and whatever, in our laws. Otherwise our kids won't move. They won't move further. They will always be afraid. And you will have abnormal children and abnormal citizens. Thank you.
Honourable members, I think what the Honourable Member is saying is that in trying to formulate this law, there needs to be cooperation. People must be responsible and make their contributions. Don't sit back and later on complain. Speak out that you can be heard. I think on the other hand, she's saying certain people's voices should not be exaggerated when we, or their roles in this whole process of formulating this legislation, their roles should not be exaggerated, one above the other. Everybody should participate in the process. Honourable Fichler.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Firstly, let me thank the Minister for giving us this elaborate input and simplifying at least the law. I just want to pick up on this question of deterrence penalties and offences. You know, where the question of deterrent is a way of trying to align people with the law. In the 60s, they introduced this minimum sentence against sabotage. And many of us were sentenced to severe sentences. But there was no outcry against that minimum sentence because the government of the day was trying to deter us from doing these acts against the government. But today, there's a lot of, there's a big outcry when you speak of types of deterrence to the offenses that are committed by the people. Now, the problem is that people do not understand that when you speak of a minimum sentence will not necessarily mean all offenses will fall under a minimum sentence. There are certain offenses that are very serious to the state that need minimum sentence, like espionage, for instance. It needs minimum sentence. A threat to overthrow the government, it needs a minimum sentence. So such information, therefore, become dangerous to the state. And therefore, we need to have severe sentences against such people. Not all offenses will definitely fall under a minimum sentence. Thank you, sir.
Honourable Minister, you got a comment on minimum sentences, and I think the Honourable Member is going beyond what you might have contemplated in your
book. No, I was only to respond to the first one. That I'll agree with Mkabadeli. As the department, and I hope as a committee, as parliament, we don't seem to claim, we can never claim that we have the sole knowledge on what best to do. And that's why there's this opportunity to engage the public hearing and listening to them, so that we can learn on how best to deal with the challenges we face as a young democracy as we grow. So I think it is very important that we listen to those comments and listen to those who say that the toddler mustn't really bend, than those who say let the toddler bend in the sake of learning. So that it be transparent, this learning, that it is practical, let it burn. So we'll be, I think it is important that we continue such measures as demanded by our legislation, best practices, and our constitution. Chairperson, I would like to stress again the importance, and because it's not just a political choice, this issue of minimum sentences. We are intending that it should be proportionate to, as Ms. Honorable Fiedler is putting, to the harmful effect of such transgressions. You know, espionage is a serious thing. Others may think it's fine if it's done in South Africa, but it's a serious thing, not to government, to what government is trying to achieve in advancing the people of South Africa and in developing. It is a very important thing. So it's not a light thing. The same thing with the information peddling, like we detailed in our first presentation. Maybe just to show how serious this thing is, some of those who peddle the information to other countries outside we reported to you now they are seeking us as government to protect them when they are required to go and put those facts in the courts in those countries. And some of those governments now, they are trying to say you must do things which are not allowed through our laws to protect them. I don't know how we protect peace and who does not cause any crime in South Africa, who is required to testify in a foreign court. So these are very serious things because they cause retardation of progress in advancing and developing and dealing with key challenges facing our people. There's been a lot of talk, Chairperson. Before we responded, the bill is broad, and we've responded positively to this. We say we remove those areas which are vacant broad. But those who are marching outside, they have not stopped. They continue this song, the bill in its current form. The bill in its current form. Precisely because they want to march. There's nothing wrong. We don't have any opposition for people marching. But be honest when you march. And don't continue to disinform as if nothing has happened, because we are responding as the ANC, we are responding as the ANC government. And that's why we're putting this thing. So I'm just saying, Chairperson, it's a very strange phenomenon. The bill in its current form. And the committee has not even finalized their consideration of the bill. But people are marching. I'm not suggesting anything. People are free to march in South Africa. But let not distort the facts as we march. So let's speak to the truth side of things. Thank you.
The Honourable Honours. The Honourable Mania.
Thank you, Chair. It seems to me that the Minister's primary argument that the bill has no implications for the media is the legitimate procedure argument. The Minister's argument that there is a legitimate procedure or route that must be followed if indeed members of the media or a parliamentarian were to come into possession of a classified document that, for example, exposed wrongdoing. Now, if we look at this practically, Minister, do you accept that, for example, if an investigative journalist or a member of parliament came into a possession of a document that was classified, that exposed, for example, corruption in the arms deal, one would be required, in terms of the bill in its current form, to hand over that document to, for example, the police. And then there's every prospect that the police would not investigate and pursue the matter, given what General Anwar Dramat and the Hawks have had to say in the past few weeks. So one would effectively be blocked. The alternative would be to perhaps to apply for that document in terms of the PIA legislation. But then given one my own practical experience of applying for information, for example, about the Airbus A400M, there's no prospect that those applications will be responded to, so once again one would be blocked. So the legitimate procedure or route that you propose in fact would have the effect of covering up information, not revealing information about corruption. What is your response to that? That's the first question. And then the second question, Chair, I'd like to get some idea of how the Minister sees the limitation on information by asking him the following question. Does he accept that it is legitimate to classify information about the costs of, for example, President Zuma's flight? Does he believe that that the information should be classified because disclosing that information would somehow affect national security?
Honourable Minister.
Thank you, Shepherdson. Thank you, Honourable Manet, for your question. I thought I dealt with this thing of cover-up, but let me repeat again. The MP, Honourable Maynard, come across is better than a journalist because he's a member of parliament. A journalist will take this information, in my view, to police, so you will call this thing and want an answer, go and investigate. Because there's something wrong here. Because the powers are the only official police, the only official body to investigate such crimes. I'm not aware of any. In terms of our constitution, who else investigate crimes? I never seen somebody say journalists investigate crimes. They may have information and assist, but the in terms of our constitution is the police, because we are a nation with a constitution and laws. I've never seen a journalist taking somebody to court. Never. I've not seen it elsewhere, anyway. But I may be ill-informed in this regard, but my understanding is the police who investigate in South Africa. Mr. Maynard, you also, as members of Parliament, have got the right to call people to account, Parliament. I'm a little bit worried, because you're saying things. It's very unlikely that the police will do anything. I think that's a very dangerous thing to say, because you're basically saying you've got no confidence in the South African police service. That's what it means. If you send something to it, it's unlikely to be investigated. I don't know where you get that, because that's not my experience. That's not our experience as government. And I don't think that's the experience of the majority of South Africans, that police don't investigate, they just throw things away. I think really, when institutions are set by our constitution, before we come with such a blatant attack on them, we must have, it should be fair to come with the information. Why are you saying so? Some of the information they are using, they are using the issue of the investigation by the Hawks. And you said what? They stopped the arms deal. I'm not my understanding, I may be wrong because I'm not responsible, but my understanding, the police, the Hawks have been investigating for the past 10 years. And if there is no evidence which we can take to court, then this is my understanding and interpretation of it. But to come then to sort of put this broad brush that the police don't investigate, I don't think it's fair. But God is a member of parliament. Because I leave it at that. So the issue of cover-up, really, I don't know. It comes now, becomes the issue of political choices, really, to me, and your political ideology. And we don't legislate according to political ideologies. We legislate in terms of what is best for South Africa and what the laws and the constitution put. It's not really our outlook that the South African police services doesn't work, doesn't do things. We don't have that. If it's not that the case, we wouldn't be having so many people in courts if the police were not investigating. The limitation, we've tried to define what would be the test for that limitation and what the international best practices. We use that three step test. And that's what will guide. Now you are asking me the question you have been asking a particular minister. I don't know. I have not received your question. I don't know what is in the content of your question. So I'm not in the best position to respond to that question. But you are saying the cost of President's flight. I don't know. I can't comment on that because I don't know what is in the detail of the cost of the of the question. But what I'll be worried, Mr. Maynard, if you say in advance you must give you information about where the president is going and all those things, there's no country without that. I'll be speculating in my response. If the intention is to disclose such things about the travel of the president, the president has got a budget and that budget is accounted for. And members of the parliament interact with that on an annual basis. So I don't know what is the challenge here. But to say now, president, before he goes, you must tell Mr. Maynard how much are you going to spend? Then how many people, where are you going to stop over, whom are you going to meet, what are you going to be discussing, you know. There's co-governance. There'll be co-governance. And if you want to govern, you must be elected. But we are an accountable governance. So we are not pushing for co-governance. So, but we remain committed to account as a government, and there are all sort of procedures for how government accounts. So, I'm not sure. So, I may be speculating. So, unfortunately, I can't answer your question because I don't know what is in the detail. It's very easy to put question as legitimate, but the devil is usually in the detail. Thank you, Shepherdson.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Honourable Minister, while the Honourable Members are thinking, your new department, the Department of State Security, generally we understand, and as an oversight committee at Parliament, the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence has its meetings behind closed doors, and dealing with your department now, given the new bill, do you see any changes in that relationship between the JSCI and the Department of State Security regarding the classified information and how the relationship is going to develop? Are there going to be any changes, any concessions, something more strict in terms of the way the bill is, or do you see that the bill will nicely mesh in with the way the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence has been functioning together with the intelligence institutions?
No, there will be no negative effect on the JSCI. JSCI is established in terms of the Act, and this bill doesn't amend that Act or restrict that Act. As I have said when I was answering my friend, Honorable Maynard, the government, in terms of our constitution, is accountable. And in trying to ensure that Parliament as an institution still account, make those agencies like state security agencies who operate in some level of secrecy to account, they'll continue to account. Actually, I think there'll be even accounting even in more detail, because I'm sure the JSCI will question them. How far I've got with the review of classified information. That's what we'll expect the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence to go into those details. How many documents have been classified? How many the old documents have been reviewed? How much has been put to the National Archive database? So we see even more role for the JSCI to do the supervision of government, and particularly to ensure that there's nothing, and to assist even the fears, Mr. Maynard, that we may be covering corruption fortunately, their party is strong enough that they've got a very significant representation even in the JSCI, and we hope that in future they still have. and it's a multi-party system. It's not a, as I said, Chairperson, in terms of openness and accountability, oversight over these secret things, the balance is right in South Africa. We're working, you know, the JSI has been working with the Americans, the Canadians, the Australians, the New Zealands to improve the oversight over these secret elements of governance. And I don't know any country which is better than us in terms of oversight and accountability of security structures, particularly those who operate in some level of secrecy. If any of the honorary members can tell me, even with the rise of this global terrorism, we have not reverted to restrict these human rights and openness because of that, like other democracy, which, the approach which has been taken by other democracies. And I still think the balance is correct in South Africa. I'll be happy, Chairperson, if you can tell me if there's any country which is better in terms of accountability and to Parliament than South Africa in this regard. Thank you.
Honourable members. One last question, then, Honourable Minister, because it seems that we're getting to the end of the session. I was wondering if perhaps you could share with us, and if you feel it unnecessary, or I will not force you, if you want to share with us what is the feeling of our neighbors regarding the whole question of information and the bill. There seems to be a lot of noise about it. I'm sure in your travels you might have had opportunity to meet with some of your counterparts, and how do you address these issues? Perhaps you want to share it with us. If you don't want to, for state security reasons, I will understand.
Are you saying they are foreign confidences? No, Chairperson. No, we interact with our neighbors. Most of them, they don't have a stringent oversight like us. So, but wherever I go, they ask me, what is it that you're doing there? And what's wrong with South Africans? But we always say we're a democratic country. We listen to everybody and we try and take the views, which is very interesting to us. But Chairperson, I've been, after the last presentation, I attended an international conference on security, which was in Moscow. Yes. Where we're dealing with some of these things. And that conference was attended by very high-ranking officials from governments around the world. So when I said Moscow, everyone laughed. The United States was represented by the National Security Advisor, the General, the Canadians, the Brazilians, many more, the French, I'll continue, Canadians, the Chinese. India, there were more than 47, there were about 47 countries there, which were looking in some of these real challenges, these real threats which are threatening, which are we're facing as nations. Not just terrorism. And all of them were asking us this question, what's happening in your country? How do you conduct security in South Africa? It looks like I'm just saying, Chairperson. And we were so concerned as nations, not just repressive nations. There were a lot of very progressive views that some of these threats are threats which may need to be have instruments to deal with them at a multilateral level, like the United Nations. Because if we don't deal, the states are starting to fail to deal with them on their own because of the transnational nature of it, because of the information technology we're facing today, and because of this phenomenon of information peddling and so on. So we are saying, for instance, we were looking at the innovations and technologies, and if you don't put appropriate security measures, for instance, for your energy sector, you're doomed. You're doomed as a nation. Because those are areas of focus and threat as we move towards the future. If we don't address those things at a multilateral level, I'm just using an example, maybe to answer your question. I'm not going to talk what happens in Botswana recently, 2 days ago, or in Angola last week. So we interact with our partners, but sometimes they get worried, but we try and convince them that we are an open democracy. And we work with our people, and we'll make sure that our security is not compromised, but take the views from our people. Thank you.
Honourable Minister, thank you for sharing with us now, which was some of the classified information which you declassified for the purposes of clarity. We're very kind of you. Honourable members, I'm going to close this meeting now. It seems that we've exhausted the questions, and I'd like to thank the Honourable Minister for coming here today. And again, it's always pleasant to have him here because he has become known as a revealer in my eyes. He's always revealing new things, making new concessions. I know the concessions might not be what one or what people expected to hear. But those are the views of the Minister, as we've said, and the committee will continue its work. And I think that will be the interesting part when the arguments and the debates start as to what should be excluded and what should be included in the bill. But we are not there yet. We are getting close to that stage. The next meeting may be on Tuesday. I'm trying to secure the meeting for Friday. There is a meeting of all chairpersons on Friday, which means there would be a substantial amount of our members that would be called to that meeting. But I will notify the honourable members by Monday whether I was able to secure the meeting for Friday. So the meeting is to be scheduled for Friday. If we can't have it Friday, we're unfortunately going to have it Tuesday. Honourable members, visitors, those of you from the media, those of you from State Law Advisors Department, from Parliament's Legal Advice Division, all other members that are here, comrades, non-comrades, thank you for coming. Honourable Minister, this meeting is now adjourned.